You are listening to Valley Edition. I'm Laura Satsui. Here in one of the world's most productive agricultural belts, we have lots of potential for community-supported agriculture, or CSAs, where consumers connect directly with growers by subscribing to weekly boxes of produce. Last month, however, a prominent Fresno CSA, known as UBI, was the latest of many to shut down. To better understand this trend, FM89's Carrie Klein sat down with three panelists, organic farmers David Obermiller of Fresno and Vernon Peterson of Kingsburg, and Ryan Galt, a professor of human ecology at UC Davis. Peterson began by explaining why he had to fold his CSA, Abundant Harvest Organics, in 2018.
Why did it shut down? Well, a dozen years ago, organic was priced too high. Because it was priced too high, it didn't move, so it wasn't fresh enough. But as time went on, retailers, grocery stores got better. Also, it was hard to find organic. It was hard to find it at a good price. It was hard to find it fresh. So we just came in and we were everybody's hero because we would just roll in with fabulous box of fresh produce. It went very well until, in the free market, the consumer is king. It's a very challenging system, but it's the best system for a society. Mm. And so when we could no longer compete or as our subscriber base dwindled, it just wasn't cost effective to run those trucks. It was a very easy economic situation. Now we're back to farming stone fruit and packing stuff for our neighbors and growing organic chickens and that kind of stuff.
Okay, and so we're here talking about how many very prominent CSAs are shutting down, and Abundant Harvest is one in the last couple of years, but there are a lot of smaller ones still operating in the Valley. David, that includes yours. You're temporarily on hiatus while you move to a new property, but it's been running for a number of years. I mean, what's kind of at the center of your business model?
Well, as far as CSA goes, I like being connected with people in the community. I like that direct connection. I like it as a farmer, but I also like it as a consumer. I like knowing, I'm the type of person, I generally shop at the same place. I like to get to know the people that are selling me whatever it is. And I appreciate that, the good customer service, the connection with who I'm supporting locally. And selling direct to the public is really important to us. And CSA happens to be one way that we're able to do that.
Okay, and let's turn to Ryan right now too. So Ryan, you've done quite a bit of research about CSAs in California, the economics, kind of consumer behavior. What do you find is kind of maybe there's not one secret, but are there some secrets to keeping them operating? Is it a matter of business model? Is it a matter of consumer behavior or something else entirely?
Well, it's a really good question, and I think there's a lot to that. One of the pieces that we found early on in the research that I was doing was that the higher the percentage of total farm sales coming through CSA, the lower the salary of farmers. It was a very strong correlation. And so in that was 2013 piece that was published. And with that, I think one of the lessons there was to diversify markets so that farmers weren't dependent fully on a CSA necessarily for their income. So I've heard from some farmers around the state when they diversified markets and they did a little bit better in terms of their own farmer earnings. One thing that we did recently was look at the retention rates of CSAs and try to run some multiple regression analyses to see what variables were most strongly correlated with higher retention rates. And so we found some general lessons for CSA farmers. One is, the more available it is in terms of months per year, the higher retention rates were. If fruit is included from the farm on a regular basis, there was higher retention rates as well. If the farm is following organic practices, that's also a very strongly correlated with retention, higher retention rates. And then crop diversity, too, that was an interesting finding. The more diverse, the different types of crop that are being grown on the farm, the higher retention rate as well. So those would be like vegetables, fruits, nuts, pulses, grains, those types of diversity in those big categories. And then one of the findings we noted in this paper also was that the stronger the competition that farmers faced and felt they experienced, that was also negatively associated with retention rates. And that makes sense given, as Vernon was saying before, the high levels of competition that are occurring in many different marketplaces in terms of, you know, regular retailers, grocery stores getting privy to fresh local organic produce and making that available, often for relatively inexpensive amounts of money compared to potentially smaller local growers, depending.
So David and Vernon, does this seem to ring true with kind of your own experiences here with CSAs in this area?
I'd say yes. From our experience, fruit is a big issue. People really, really love having fruit in their box. Competition's an issue. Another issue being variety. And that puts a lot of stress on us as a farm, where the consumer goes to a grocery store, and at least in America, you see the same product on the shelf year-round. You know, grapes from America in the summer, grapes from Chile in the winter. And for us as a small farm, to grow 60, 70 different items and provide a virtual supermarket produce department through our farms, a real challenge. One of the things that we heard from our customers was, you know, you provide a selection of produce, but then they still have to go to the store because we don't have bananas per se. And bananas are one of the most popular fruits in the country. Well, the consumer is like, well, I have to go to the supermarket anyway. So now I'm buying from two different people, and you got to get online and perhaps place an order, and it becomes a convenience factor too, where we have, I'm American too, I love the convenience of American society, but we're also competing with the convenience factor of the big box store, grocery store.
Oh, it's quite a treadmill to try to do what Tom Willie did, for instance, you know, to have all those items every week.
That's Tom Willie being an organic farmer who had the predecessor to Ubi, this CSA that just shut down.
It's an amazing thing that Tom did. And Tom was a regular provider to our CSA. We would get something from his wife, Dinesh, every week. But we were always fruit centric, so at least a third of the box every week was fruit. Mm. That's what I do. We were able to provide that at a really efficient price point. But yeah.
And so Ryan, you had talked about some regional variations across California and a lot of these different factors. I mean, are there parts of the state where CSAs are doing much better and are able to survive more easily, or is this a problem that if you consider it a problem that CSAs can't survive, or is this an issue that you're seeing elsewhere as well?
Well, yeah, I think within California, we see the regional differences that are most pronounced that came out in our data, which is a number of years old now, was really the more rural and more remote counties, the CSAs there were doing better in terms of their farmer satisfaction. The more urban areas were typically lower. And then there was a divide between Northern and Southern California, too, where farmer satisfaction was even lower in Southern California than it was in Northern California. And we see that we did a general survey of the California grocery store purchasing population, mostly everyone. And within that, we did see differences in values of higher value of organic, valuing of organic in Southern California versus more valuing of local in Northern California, which is pretty interesting. But I think generally, I think there are problems. Certainly, as David is saying, you know, the amount of management and growing knowledge that's required to do a highly diversified farm is very, very large. And then in addition to that, you have to be also an expert at customer service and culinary arts in terms of making sure people can cook these things. So I think that the challenges are quite formidable in terms of the knowledge and the diversity of the knowledge needed to run it. But I think generally, you know, I've been giving a lot of thought to policies that could support this, because the benefits that society gets from CSA is quite large. It's much beyond the fresh local produce, which is quite fantastic. The other benefits are really, you know, in our research we showed that the dollar amount in terms of gross sales per acre of CSAs is very, very high, which means that it's supporting a lot of workers. It's giving, that means a lot of jobs for communities, and they're high quality farm work jobs relative to a lot of California, where you have more year-round security of employment, which is super important for farm workers in our state, and generally higher salaries, higher benefits. So those benefits are to workers. There's also kind of the multifunctionality benefits in terms of what, you know, people call ecosystem services, with carbon sequestration, with all the compost that most CSAs or farmers are using, providing valuable climate service, right, in terms of mitigating climate change. There's all these hosts of benefits that CSAs provide, but unfortunately, society, we don't have a lot of policy mechanisms that support that. So we leave it up to individual consumers to say, oh, I'm willing to pay more for all these positive benefits. And that means that if we're letting people pay more, we're going to be relying on the people who have more money, and rather than kind of general policy support. So what I would like to see in California would be, you know, policies that support small scale and or diversified farmers who are doing this kind of work with all these multiple benefits.
Right. And we've all kind of talked about in some way, you know, going to grocery stores and how easy it is to get so many things, especially things that are not seasonal here in this area. I mean, what does all this say about maybe how difficult it can be to maintain a CSA and to get people to pay for it, even though there is some demand? What does all this say about, you know, the food system that we have set up in this country and the way that we kind of connect with our, you know, with agriculture?
Well, I could talk for 10 hours on this, on this subject. Yeah, it's really difficult. The free market's a very efficient system. It isn't a very kind one. Mm-hmm. We would all love to produce under socialism, but use the money we earn to purchase in the free market. To me, what we had, what does the most good for the most people is the free market. And so we have to figure out how to differentiate ourselves. If we can quantify the nutritional value, David, of what we produce, mm-hmm. and show that that is a vastly superior product nutritionally.
That's right.
It's going to take a lot more farmers to accomplish that.
I really agree with him. You know, the challenge of running and maintaining a business is not unique to farmers. In the American economic system, and I'm like Vernon, I believe in the free market, but you've got to be innovative, and the consumer and the whole marketplace is going to challenge you to be creative and keep up and be progressive in what you do. And it doesn't matter if you're in manufacturing or technology. It's about innovation and moving forward. And that is a challenge for farmers, because we tend to get focused on what we're growing and need to innovate in regard to how we interact with the community and how we package our product. And Vern said really well, and something I'm passionate about is, you know, the average plate of American food, I think the statistic is, travels 1,500 miles before you get to eat it. Well, for the, I don't want to say majority, but for a lot of produce items, that's got to be picked before it's biologically mature. And I've heard this a lot. I'm only 40, but I've heard this a lot from older Americans. Food doesn't taste like it used to. Well, that's a result of farming practices, true, but also a result of food industry changes, where you've got a more global food industry and a lot of transportation of food, and educating people on all of those issues and helping them to understand how to make better choices as a consumer, as a person in the kitchen, for your own health, and all of those things are really important too.
I guess I had one further thought, and it was really to agree on the nutrient density of food coming out of these systems and the importance of that research. So I'd love to be part of that work with either Vernon or David. But I wanted to kind of push back a little bit on the idea of the free market and the way that it operates in the U.S., because to me, we don't see a lot of elements of the free market system working that well here, in the sense that one is the support system for agriculture in the U.S. is highly skewed towards very big farms and towards conventional mm-hmm. farms. And so that creates an incentive structure that's going to privilege both conventional farming and also larger scale and kind of farmers getting bigger. On the other hand, in terms of kind of the meat, the bloodline, right, of agriculture, a lot of it's fossil fuels in terms of conventional fertilizer, the use of tractors. Fossil fuels are vastly undervalued in terms of the actual costs that they impose on society now and in the future. If we were to pay the true cost of fossil fuel burning, it would be much more expensive. But instead, we're having future generations pay that cost. And so we're externalizing those negative environmental consequences and not paying the true cost of those food goods. And CSA farmers are internalizing a lot of those costs and having to compete against a system that's externalized those. That's not fair either. And it's not free. It just means we're not paying the true costs of fossil fuels. And then lastly, the concentration in the food system, the power of some of the biggest food companies is so big that they're able to kind of break free of the important kind of beneficial effects of competition and have oligopolies where they can get way more profit out of the food system than farmers do now. So if we had a system where there wasn't nearly as much power concentrated in the big food industry oligopolies and the retail oligopolies, then farmers could potentially get more money for their dollar overall. And then prices wouldn't be so low also for what farmers are receiving in terms of farm gate prices. So those are a few thoughts in terms of how the market's not working in a free market kind of way in the U.S. and the ways that we could use policy to make it work more efficiently and more fairly.
All right. Well, really interesting. I feel like we could keep talking about this for hours. But I want to thank you all, David Overmiller, Vernon Peterson, and Ryan Galt. Thank you so much for speaking with me today.
You're welcome.
My privilege.
Thank you, Gary.